It was not long into the presidential term of Donald Trump that people began showing up at Trump rallies with shirts and hats and signs with a single letter, Q. Q is often accompanied by Anon, as in anonymous. And after a while, the rest of the country came to know of the QAnon beliefs and conspiracies, which include things like believing that some elite leaders drink the blood of children. If true, it would be very scary. But that people hold such beliefs alone can be scary to many of us. Mike Rothschild goes deep into the beliefs in a new book, The Storm Is Upon Us, How QAnon Became a Movement, Cult, and Conspiracy Theory of Everything. Mike Rothschild is a journalist who tends to gravitate to stories about internet culture and politics and the generation of conspiracy theories at that crossroads. He has focused intently on QAnon since 2018. Mike Rothschild, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
That is quite a rabbit hole you've gone down. Do you have to take breaks often to reframe?
Yes, I do. And it's a question I get a lot. You know, how do you keep from plunging into a hole of insanity? And I treat this as a job. I log in the morning, I do my work, and I log off at night, and I try not to think about it in between. You know, if you treat it as kind of a vocation rather than as a crusade, I think you can compartmentalize a little bit and say, okay, this is what I'm diving in, but here's the time I'm going to protect myself.
Yeah, well, protection obviously necessary with some of this. There's a quote late in the book. You write, "No movement based on the prophecy of a purge of the deep state carried out by Donald Trump can remain unscathed now that Donald Trump is no longer president." And yet, it has some staying power, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. You know, the people who believe this stuff have not stopped believing it just because any remote chance of it coming true is now gone. The idea of the president unleashing a mass arrest of the deep state really doesn't apply to Joe Biden anymore, given that he's probably a charter member of the deep state. So what these people have done is instead take the mythology, take the tenets of QAnon, and apply it to what was done to Trump to get him out of office. And, of course, the promise that he will return at some point. So you have this idea of the election was stolen from him, but he knew it all along. He had to allow it to be stolen in order to expose the fraud behind the stealing. You know, it never occurs to people, hey, maybe he could have just won the election the way he did the last time. But these are not people who are looking for simple solutions. They like things that are really complicated and difficult to understand.
Which brings us to a question, actually, I put low down on the list here, but this really gets to some of the tenets of religion, and you do draw some serious parallels there with religions and cults here with QAnon, but the idea that often the absence of evidence is the evidence for them.
Right. There is a religious element to Q. You know, you certainly can look at the Q drops as a kind of a scripture, but more than that, it's really based around the prophecy of a great event that's going to happen. And many, many religions are based around that. You know, the return of the Messiah, the golden age, things like that. That's a very basic human belief. So in that respect, QAnon's not really that different from many other religions. It has its prophecies, it has its priests, it has its scriptures. It's just that with Q, it all happened so quickly, and it's all based around a violent purge. So there is a lot of overlap between the kind of millennialist Christian identity movements and QAnon, which end with this sort of the fiery demise of the enemies of the people. You know, there's a lot of overlap there.
And yet, there seems to be very little questioning about purging the enemies of the people, sometimes by acting like enemies of the people.
Right. They don't seem to grasp the irony of a ultra-patriotic movement that, at its heart, is based around the unconstitutional military tribunal of people who have been designated enemies by the president. You know, I don't think you really get much more of an un-American and unpatriotic idea. Or, you know, the unpatriotic idea of your vote doesn't count if we've decided that the election was unfair. You know, we have certain principles in this country, and Q violates them in the service of giving us a better and more patriotic country. It's quite ironic.
Since the book went to press and not very long ago, wasn't Q heard from again for the first time in more than a year?
Yes, there was a return of Q. So the last Q drops before a few months ago was December of 2020, and then Q just went silent. There was no goodbye. There was a post from Ron Watkins, who's the figure who is most likely believed to have made most of the Q drops, who said something like, you know, we have to accept that Biden is the president now. We can take all the friends and happy memories we've made with us. But Q returned very briefly in June of 2022, you know, just a couple months ago, with a couple of very low-effort posts. One was basically like the equivalent of tapping the microphone and saying, hey, is this thing on? And then there was one with a few questions about the January 6th hearings. And then once everybody figured out what was going on and that it was pretty clear that it was Jim Watkins, who is the father of Ron Watkins, who owns the message board where the Q posts were made, who was probably making those posts, new Q disappeared very quickly.
So has Ron Watkins ever admitted that he's the one putting all the posting up?
Oh, no, never. He never will. He's never say never, but he probably never will. He's said many times, I'm not Q. I don't know what Q is. I know nothing about that. That has nothing to do with me. While numerous pieces of circumstantial evidence point to him, there's been a writing analysis of Ron's writing versus Q's writing that shows that they're basically identical. There's the fact that when 8chan went down, it was hacked in the summer of 2019, and then it came back as a different board. It had a different name, but it was the same thing. The first person who could post on it was Q. And then you see there's a great moment in the HBO documentary, Q Into the Storm, where Ron is asked about that. And he goes, well, maybe Q is just special. And you know, it's things like that, that you go, okay, it could be somebody else, but it's probably not.
So, first of all, why are they called drops, and what was the original theory on who Q was?
Sure. So that term drop, you know, I don't actually know who was the first person to apply that term to Q's post, but it's part of a larger jargon that Q uses. You know, there's a certain terminology that a lot of these movements tend to have that's very insular, and it looks like gibberish from the outside, but if you're inside, you know exactly what all the words mean, and it's a way to kind of separate the in-group from the out-group. And early on, you know, there was a lot of discussion of who was making these posts. And there were all kinds of theories. You know, it was Steve Bannon, it was Mike Flynn, it was Trump himself, it was Russian intelligence. And, you know, slowly all of those things kind of faded away or proved to be untrue or really never had any evidence. So our best guess, and this is something that a lot of other experts have really all but confirmed, is that the first Q posts were most likely made by this guy named Paul Ferber. And I mentioned him in the book, and he's a big character in the HBO documentary. He's a South African web programmer, very familiar on 4chan. And he posted things that, again, are very much in line with his known writing style. And he was really one of the first people to go viral sharing Q posts. He's one of the two people who went on InfoWars in December of 2017 to evangelize for Q. And I think the real clue is that when Q jumped from 4chan to 8chan, so went from one image board to another, 8chan is a board where you basically create your own board and people can post on it. And Q started posting on the board that Paul Ferber owned. So there really was no other reason for Q to do that other than it was Paul doing this. And then Q probably changed hands a couple of times and then eventually wound up with Ron Watkins. And so what we have is a situation where there's no one person who made all these posts, and it's fairly likely that the person who was doing the posts at the end doesn't know who was doing them at the beginning. And so there might be no one who knows exactly who made every single one of these posts.
You know, and the other thing about it is it's all so cryptic. I mean, these are short messages, often not complete sentences. And I have to believe that actually adds to the allure. People can fill in the spaces as their own brains see fit.
Yeah, that's a huge part of the allure of QAnon. It is a conspiracy theory where every single person gets to create their own version of it. So if there is something that you're really into that's not part of the Q milieu, whether it's UFOs, whether it's human trafficking, whether it's numerology, you can add those things to your version of Q and make your own decodes and say, well, when Q asks, you know, what does this mean? Here's what it means. And people can run with that. So you'll see a lot of major concepts in the QAnon universe had nothing to do with Q. Q never posted these things. Hugh never posted about John F. Kennedy Jr. being alive. And in fact, when asked, Hugh said, no, John F. Kennedy Jr. is not alive. Hugh never posted about adrenochrome, the supposed adrenalized blood of children that the elites drink. That's something that came from a completely different branch of conspiracy world. But what Q does is it lets you say, hey, I like this thing. I'm going to add it to my own version, and maybe other people will get into that too. So what it makes is a kind of the very top, which is Q, and then there's a layer below that, which is these promoters who take their own ideas and infuse it into the stuff that Q posted, and they go off on their own tangent. And you have all these different versions of Q, and there's no one that's right or wrong or definitive.
But, you know, there are some things that at least, well, I guess the problem is that there's still time, you know, things still pass, you know, so things can change. But the things that certainly can be disproven, like the idea that Hillary Clinton and John McCain were wearing walking boots to hide their ankle monitors. I mean, they haven't been, well, John McCain is dead and Hillary Clinton still right. hasn't been arrested. I mean, so there are consistently broken promises of something big coming soon. And yet that doesn't seem to dissuade anybody.
Right, and Q really was built on these sort of broken promises and these blown deadlines. The first Q posts were all about the specific dates when Hillary Clinton and John Podesta and Barack Obama and George Soros were all going to be arrested, and nothing happened. But that was the point already when so many people were into this story that they just ran with it. They just decided, hey, I'm going to follow this wherever it goes. And so a post that is clearly about Hillary Clinton being arrested on November 3rd, it was actually about corruption in the Saudi royal family that will be exposed on November 12th. It doesn't matter that none of it comes true. You want it to come true. And if you walk away from it, well, that's the point where it is going to come true and you're going to miss out. And at some point, you've devoted so much of your life to this, so much of your personality is tied up in QAnon, that you can't walk away. You don't have anywhere else to go. So you keep believing no matter what, because, hey, at some point it has to come true, right?
This is the Jefferson Exchange. Mike Rothschild is our guest. His book is The Storm is Upon Us, How QAnon Became a Movement, Cult, and Conspiracy Theory of Everything. We haven't talked about the Anon part. How did that get in there?
Sure. So the term Anon has a couple of meanings. Anons are really anybody who posts on one of these anonymous image boards. These are places where you don't have to provide any kind of screen name. You're just a bunch of numbers, and there's no personalities there. It's all about the text and the images. It's not about who you are. But there's also another tradition, and I write about this quite a bit in the book, of Anons who supposedly had high-ranking jobs in the White House, in the FBI, in federal law enforcement, in British intelligence. And so you would have White House insider Anon. You'd have high-level insider Anon. And they would show up and they would take questions and pretend to be spilling secrets about, what's really going on in the White House, or what's really going on with aliens or underground tunnels or trafficking or whatever. And so when Q appeared, they became Q Anon because they started calling themselves Q Clearance Patriots. So Q Clearance is a real thing. It's a Department of Energy term that basically means you're read in on certain classified information about nuclear power. It's actually very common. I know people who have Q Clearance. It's not that big of a deal. It has nothing to do with military intelligence or classified, you know, secrets, things like that. But there's a tradition that Q clearance is all, it's all about being read into the top secrets and conspiracies. So you take the Q clearance patriot, and they're an Anon, so they're QAnon. And for several years, that term started to encompass this whole movement up until the point where that term became extremely toxic, and the people who believed all this stuff decided, there's no such thing as QAnon. That was made up by the media to make us look crazy. So QAnon is just Q clearance patriot Anon.
All right. So just prior to the first Q drop in October of 2017, Donald Trump, then president, gathered the military leaders in front of the media and said, is this the calm before the storm? What was that about, and how is it connected to what became QAnon?
Well, nobody really quite knows what it was about. That was
still
the whole issue with the remark. Nobody's ever figured out what Trump was trying to say there. What he was, it's just sort of more babble from somebody who just liked to hear the sound of his voice. But after a couple of weeks, you started to have these people showing up on 4chan who decided that they understood what that meant. And there's a long tradition in conspiracy movements of taking a cryptic remark or a world event that nobody really understands and saying, I understand, and it's this. And if your explanation is compelling enough and you talk about it a lot, people will start to get behind it. So that idea of the calm before the storm was actually, oh, it's Trump announcing that there's going to be a mass arrest of the deep state. And again, you think, well, if all of this is being done publicly and all of these decodes are completely free to read, why doesn't the deep state do something about this? Why don't they stop this? Again, these are questions that these people never ask themselves. But that comment, which was really forgotten among all of the bizarre comments Donald Trump made, really was the catalyst for this movement starting.
The movement is QAnon, and we're talking to Mike Rothschild, a journalist who has gotten deep into the rabbit hole to cover it all. His book is called The Storm Is Upon Us, How QAnon Became a Movement, Cult, and Conspiracy Theory of Everything. You may have many questions of your own. Mike has answers to some of them because they can't all be answered still. 800-838-3760 to join us by phone, 800-838-3760, or send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Mike, do you think old line media made mistakes and missteps in how it covered this?
I definitely think so. I think there is a tendency with movements like QAnon, and of course you saw it with things like Pizzagate before that, to say, don't give it any attention, don't give it oxygen, don't feed the trolls. And I think the intentions behind that are fine. You know, we think, oh, all they want is to be talked about, and if we don't give them what they want, then they'll go away. The problem is they don't go away. And when you ignore a movement like QAnon, it still grows. It still finds new converts. It's just doing it in a way where there's no oversight. No one's paying attention to it. No one's pushing back at it. So then when it emerges in the mainstream, and there are moments where you can't deny it, you can't help but talk about it, that you don't really have much to say, and you don't have much of a way to counter it because you haven't really done the groundwork. Understand what it is and where it comes from and why people believe it. So yeah, I think that with these kinds of things, you know, we certainly don't want to platform bad actors and we certainly don't want to platform conspiracy theories without challenging them. But I think challenging them is extremely important and doing it very quickly, you know, very early on in these things.
Which didn't happen, and therefore it did get to grow. But another backwards hypothetical here: if Trump and or the Republican Party had dismissed or down talked Q early, do you think it would have made any difference?
I think it would have. I think that if Republican leaders, you know, certainly Trump was never going to do it, but if you had much more mainstream figures in conservative politics and media saying, "Look, you know, we have our differences, but this Q stuff is crazy. You know, we don't think Hillary Clinton eats babies. We don't think there are satanic pedophiles running the world. Like, this is not us." I think it would have fueled some of the grievances of QAnon believers, but I also think it would have prevented some of the mainstreaming of these ideas. But at the same time, you have a conspiracy theorist president. You have, Donald Trump, who rose to political prominence by questioning where Barack Obama was born and tweeting things like, you know, the Hawaiian health official who released his birth certificate died in a mysterious plane crash. No others hurt. You know, these are just conspiracy theories. But they are things that up until the mid-teens, you know, up until Trump really got into running for president, this was stuff that was still very fringe. This was InfoWars. This was late-night shortwave radio. This was, you know, very strange books that people didn't really read in big numbers. It was, you know, fringe message boards. This wasn't mainstream stuff. Trump mainstreamed all of this stuff. So it really, the ground was extremely fertile for a conspiracy theory built around Trump being a messianic figure who would take down the New World Order. You know, we were really ripe for that.
But here I come back to the whole question of, like, how people continue to sustain this when there are consistently broken promises of information. And Trump himself, as you mentioned, the Barack Obama birth certificate, you know, he talked about his investigators in Honolulu. Oh, you won't believe what they're finding. They found nothing except the birth certificate that indicated Barack Obama was born in Hawaii. And yet the same sort of thing keeps happening with Q. It's like, oh, this is going to happen. This person's going to be arrested. That person's going to be arrested. We were looking at your Twitter banner a little bit about this. You were supposedly arrested yourself, huh?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I never got the cuffs slapped on me. But, you know, there is a long tradition in these kinds of movements of running with ideas that have no evidence behind them, don't make any sense, are completely falsified by history itself, because it fits into your worldview. It fits into what you want to believe. And so when you have somebody like Trump saying, oh, you're not going to believe what I found, and then he doesn't find anything, you're already primed to say, well, he couldn't say it. He didn't find anything because they hid it. They knew he was coming, and they're running. They're terrified now. So every failure and every disconfirmation is seen as more proof that you are correct and that the powerful people who you are trying to take down, they're taking notice of you and they're scared of you. And if you've got the bad guys, if you've got the New World Order or the deep state on the run, you're not going to stop. You're going to push even harder because now you finally got a chance to win. And that's really what this is about. It's about victory. It's about vanquishing the evil forces that have controlled banking and education and the media for hundreds of years. You know, this goes back to, you know, conspiracy theories about Jews running everything, Freemasons, the Catholics. You know, this is just another rung on the same ladder that we've been climbing for generations.
Oh, sure. The shadowy Illuminati and all the rest. Yeah.
Sure.
Email here from Scott in Ashland who asks, is there something about making specific predictions with dates and times that somehow enhances someone's credibility even after the date passes and the prediction doesn't come true? I'm thinking not only of QAnon, but also of religious figures who have repeatedly predicted the end of the world on specific dates. I'm thinking the Millerites myself. Yeah. Then given new dates after the world survived the previously announced end date and still are believed by their followers. Has anyone studied this phenomenon psychologically? Asks Scott in Ashland.
Well, there's the great book, When Prophecy Fails, and it was written in the mid-1950s, and it's a study of a Chicago-based UFO cult. It's a very small group. It's maybe just a few dozen people. And there's the same kind of thing. There's a housewife who says she's getting messages from aliens who are telling her there's going to be a great flood and the world is going to be destroyed, and only the few people in her orbit will be saved at the last minute by a ship that comes and picks them up. Well, the book chronicles these people going outside on a brutally cold December night in Chicago, waiting for the ship to come. They're singing Christmas carols. They're so excited. Nothing happens. A few people give up and walk away, but the rest of the people say, well, you know, maybe we just got the details wrong, but it's still going to happen. So when you have a movement like this, The more details you pile onto it, the more specifics you pile onto it, the more very specific dates, terms, backstories, it becomes more believable because it's like it's got those details. It's got that fleshed out world to it. It's got that backstory the way any good long-running book series does. The more vague it is, the more you can dismiss it. The more specific it is, the more you feel like, oh, nobody would make something up with that much detail. Well, of course they would, but you feel like, oh, it's got to be true because it's this detailed.
You mentioned the book series just now, and I had been thinking earlier about, you know, this is kind of like getting to live in Game of Thrones or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's getting to live in Game of Thrones or a Tom Clancy novel where there's danger around every corner and secrets and technology and there's things that you're not supposed to know about. And, oh, you discover them and now they're coming after you. You know, there is a Tom Clancy, a Dan Brown kind of feeling to some of these things where there's puzzles for you to solve and there's danger. That's really why it's compelling. Everybody wants to be the hero of an exciting story. We don't want to live dull, boring lives where nothing interesting happens. We want to live exciting lives where the Illuminati have singled us out for destruction because we're a threat. You know, that Q is really good at tapping into that.
Well, there's that whole vanquishing of evil thing that you mentioned, too. I mean, there's a whiff of the Book of Revelation in here. Are many of the people in QAnon religious? Were you able to determine that much?
Yes, there is definitely a Book of Revelations, spiritual warfare aspect to a lot of this. And so you get a lot of references to things like putting on the armor of God, picking up your sword to vanquish the demons, scrambling the enemy's radar, you know, these very sort of holy roller concepts that, you know, weren't that big in a lot of Christian identity circles, right? Maybe they were, but they weren't embraced by people who were really into things like UFOs. Those were very, very small cultic groups that was not mainstream stuff. But now you have a merging of all of these different kinds of movements where you have, you know, occult stuff and numerology stuff But you've also got, you know, haggling over how many votes Brett Kavanaugh is going to get. Everything has gotten merged together, and it's, you're not going to, nobody believes all of it, but chances are there's something in it for everybody.
Email here from Gary, no town given, says this QAnon stuff is right out of the National Enquirer and would have been laughed out of the country 40 years ago. Has America become so dumb that a sizable portion of the electorate gives this tripe credence? Seriously, this all points to the stupidification of America, writes Gary.
Well, I think that it, I mean, it sounds like it's National Enquirer stuff. I mean, you look at some of these theories and you can't help but laugh at them. I mean, they seem just ridiculous.
It's almost a bat boy, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, there's a totally an element of that to it. And I think what would have happened with something like QAnon 40 years ago is that there would have been people who believed it, but these would have been very isolated people. These would have been the people who stood on a street corner with a shopping cart full of cans screaming about fluoride. I mean, these would have been the people who you want nothing to do with, who, you know, the creepy guys who hung out at the weird bookstore or, you know, were tuning into, excuse me, shortwave radio at 3 a.m. to find out when the UN was going to kick down their door. That's who these people would have been. These movements have always been with us, but they work so much better, and they're able to radicalize more people because of newer technology. You know, some of the precursor scams and frauds to Q that I write about in the book, they really flourished in places like early Yahoo groups, Usenet groups, early internet bulletin boards. These people were able to connect with each other and build whole worlds based around these great financial events that were supposed to come. Before that, it would have been fax blasts or chain emails. You know, it would have been much slower, and it would have pulled in many fewer people, but it still would have existed in some way. We just probably wouldn't have really known about it.
That's a good point, because when you think about the internet as a network of networks, I mean, the fact is that these local networks existed for a long time. I remember the people used to hand me these, you know, 15-page single-spaced typewritten screeds about how it's a felony to make a loan at a bank.
Right.
So now all these people can find each other. So their ability to make a national or international connection is quite vast. To come back to Gary's point, I mean, he obviously feels sad for the country. There's certainly reasons for that. But from early in the book, I mean, it was a sadness within families as well, that people have watched loved ones just go into this.
Sure. And that's the reason that I don't laugh at it. You know, the inclination is just to just say these people are nuts, you know, forget about them. But these are families. These are loved ones. These are people that we know. I can't tell you how many interviews I've done where somebody who I've talked to said, yeah, my sister or my aunt or my friend from college is really deep into this stuff. And it's gotten to the point now where we all seem to know somebody who has been sucked into one of these kinds of movements. And it doesn't have to be QAnon. It can be the anti-vaccine movement. It can be the stolen election movement. It can be these kind of outrageous fears of LGBTQ culture, cancel culture, whatever it is. Somebody we know is probably really, really deep into believing something that is not true. And QAnon, of course, ties into all of this stuff. And if you believe in one of those kinds of things, we know from a great deal of study that you are much more likely to believe more than one of these things. So if you're an anti-vax person and you think Trump is the rightful president, you're probably going to be really open to believing Q is real.
So were people still in the club willing to sit down and talk with you about what they got from it?
I find talking to actual QAnon believers to be extremely frustrating. First of all, they don't trust me. You know, I'm the media, my last name, you know, I debunk these things. They're not going to.
Oh, God, that's right. You're the Rothschilds. Those
right.
Rothschilds.
Well, that's,
yes.
that's what my next book is. I'm working on it right now, is a history of conspiracy theories about the Rothschild banking family. And I'm not related. You know, my family's from a completely different part of Germany. The Rothschilds never actually emigrated to America. That's one of the things I've learned.
No.
But yes, much more will be revealed about that. But there is an inherent distrust of the media and a feeling like the media is part of this, part of the deep state. So these people are never going to tell you the truth. And you can never quite tell, like, what is a genuine belief, what is them trolling you, and what is mental illness that truly needs help. But where I do find it to be very productive is in talking to the family members and the loved ones and the people who are watching somebody else go down this rabbit hole of distrust and paranoia. And that's where the real heartbreak is. And that's where you can really see the impact of these things and why they really need to be taken seriously.
Well, and we were talked about the global reach here. And so you did talk to somebody who, is in the process of extricating himself, Jitarth Jadeja. What pulled him in the first place?
He's talked about how he was diagnosed with ADHD, and right around the same time, he suffered some professional setbacks, and he was already really into Bernie Sanders and some of the very far left stuff, and everything just kind of started snowballing. He started doing more research and looking into more things, and I think he told me that he found the 10-part video series, I think it was Fall of the Cabal, which is what he found. And one of the first lines of the narration of that movie is, do you ever wonder why you feel like you can't get ahead in life? And you go, of course I wonder that. Everybody wonders that. And then it starts to sort of hammer away at you with, you can't get ahead because you are being kept down by a cabal. And it's a cabal of Jewish banking. It's a cabal of corrupt politicians, of bought and paid for media. And here are the people who are going to do something about it. And by the end of it, you go, I want to do something about it. Now I know what's happened, and I want to fight back. And, you know, Jitarth's a really good guy. He just got pulled into something that told him what he wanted to hear at the exact right moment he needed to hear it. And that really could be anybody. That could be any of us. It doesn't have to be QAnon. It doesn't have to be a Trump person. It can be anybody being told the thing they need to hear at the time they need to hear it.
Well, something like, you know, this dewormer paste that is used on horses as well as humans can be the remedy for your potential illness. Yeah, all kinds of stuff that gets people in. Heidi in Medford emailed to say, Jesus was born over 2,000 years ago. Some of us still believe his mother was a virgin. Really?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, everybody believes something that they don't have the evidence for. You know, one of the things that people talk about with me is like, oh, you don't think conspiracies are real? Well, of course conspiracies are real. Or you say, well, is all religion bad? No, not all religion is bad. Most religion's fine. You know, if you find value in believing that Jesus was born to a virgin, that's great. You know, live your life. Do what you're going to do. And many people take those beliefs and they turn them into something positive for their community. Just with QAnon, it is inherently based in violence. It's inherently based in an in-group versus an out-group and the exclusion of people in the out-group, a very cultish kind of jargon and devotion to Donald Trump. And it very quickly turns into the ideation of harm in a way that mainstream religions generally do not. You don't have those positive aspects to QAnon. You only have the suspicion and the distrust and the violent ideation.
Well, the violent ideation goes beyond just ideation. And you point out a whole chapter on the crimes of QAnon followers. Give a taste of some of the things that have happened.
Oh, sure. You've had, certainly with January 6th, new presence there. But long before that, you had the story of Matthew Wright, the guy who barricaded himself in his armored truck and was demanding that Donald Trump release the unredacted Inspector General report, which was a thing that only existed in QAnon. There was no such report. There have been numerous murders committed by people who believed in some aspect of QAnon. You know, you had the Frank Cali killing, the Gambino boss who was shot dead by a guy who wrote Q sent me on his hand and thought Frank Cali, this Gambino boss, was part of the deep state. I mean, I don't know why you would think that the mob was part of the deep state, but, you know, people believe these things. You've had Q-pilled lawyers who have convinced their clients to kidnap their own children, to save them from being sold to sexual slavery and child protective services. One of those lawyers was shot dead. You've had incidents of vandalism, a huge amount of harassment, violent threats directed at people who have been thought of as being part of the sex trafficking cult. People who've been brigaded with death threats and that kind of thing. So there are victims of this. There are people whose lives have been dramatically altered because of QAnon.
Well, and then January 6th, which we've just touched on. Now, let's go a little more firmly there, because a case can be made, I think, either way, that it would have happened without QAnon, but QAnon certainly added some gasoline to that fire.
Oh, absolutely. I think it certainly would have happened without QAnon. The stolen election movement was pumped up by Donald Trump for months before the election, you know, that it's going to be rigged, it's fraudulent. I mean, this is the guy who complained about the 2016 election, that was fraudulent and rigged, and he won that election. So, you know, that you always knew there was going to be some element of Trump refusing to accept what actually happened, and the people who are devoted to Trump would go right along with that. But with Q, you had a drumbeat of very specific conspiracy theories, these very specific ways that the election was going to be stolen. And you weren't really getting that with a lot of other media. Q talked about things like the ballots are going to be cloned from Chinese computer systems. And we saw echoes of that in mainstream conspiracy theories after the election. We saw things like in order to terrify elderly people into not going to their polling place and sending in mail-in ballots. So this idea of COVID and the election and mail-in voting all being linked together was something that was very, very popular on QAnon. And I think a lot of that seeped into other extremist groups, even groups that really wanted nothing to do with QAnon. You know, there are people like the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys. They didn't want anything to do with QAnon, but they all had the same ideas. And so they were all ripe for kind of merging with each other when the time was right. And when Donald Trump gave the go order, they all went to D.C.
Let's see. We have an email here from Rex. He headlines it Gulf of Tonkin Conspiracy and asks, can you talk about the difference between a real conspiracy theory and a baseless conspiracy theory? Gulf of Tonkin resolution, obviously the attack on a U.S. warship allegedly in the Gulf of Tonkin led to the resolution that led to the escalation of the Vietnam War.
Right. And that's one of those areas where that line between conspiracy theory and actual conspiracy and then just things that happen in tense situations and people making mistakes becomes very fine. I mean, something like Gulf of Tonkin, you know, we know that there was an attack on the U.S. destroyer. You know, the bullet holes are in the ship. But it's that second attack that has been the subject of innumerable conspiracy theories because there's really no proof that there was one. But the sailors believed they were under attack. They were shooting into the dark. They were firing off missiles and depth charges. And the Johnson administration then took their panicked reactions and said, oh, the ship's under attack again. It's not a bunch of kind of, you know, people in robes sitting around a table deciding, well, we're going to say that this country is going to go to war with that country. It's never quite that organized. These people never quite get it together to do that. It's just, hey, we were driven to this by mistakes and the fog of war, and then something happened and it got out of control and we couldn't stop. And we've seen that happen with many other conflicts. So there are definitely real conspiracies. You know, the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, the plot to kill Adolf Hitler in July 1944, those are real conspiracies. The cigarette companies, you know, hiding the effects of tobacco, that's a real conspiracy. But conspiracy theories, especially ones that have been around for decades, they would require so many people to be in on it and so many things to go in a certain way, so many secrets being kept for so long, that they really do fall apart when you start to examine them. So that to me is the real difference between conspiracy and conspiracy theory.
So we're down to about our last 30 seconds, Mike. The FBI serving of the warrant at Mar-a-Lago, has QAnon specifically talked about this? I mean, is QAnon even needed anymore to fire up the right wing in America? This seems like one of those see, told you moments.
Oh, yeah. There's no need for QAnon anymore with something like that. This is all part of the deep state plot to take down Trump, the FBI. They're all in on it. They would do anything to destroy him. They don't need cryptic clues and drops and things like that. When you've got Fox News and, you know, mainstream Republican politicians throwing out bizarre conspiracy theories to explain what's really happening, that's the point for me where we've moved beyond Q drops and we're now just looking at mainstream American politics and media.
We have a final email here from Norman in Ashland who says, today we are committed to all citizens being able to read and write. In the future, we must commit to all citizens being well-versed in critical thinking. The balance of belief versus reason is slipping, and us with it. Thanks for that, Norman in Ashland. And thanks to Mike Rothschild for sharing with us The Storm is Upon Us, How QAnon Became a Movement, Cult, and Conspiracy Theory of Everything. Mike, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Take care. That will do it for today's exchange. We are online at jeffexchange.org. Producer Angela Decker, assistant producer Nash Bennett of JPR News, student assistant Zach Beagle at the controls today. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Please join us next time on The Exchange. Stay safe and cool and have a great day.